You're now officially being recorded.
Oh, I'm being recorded?
Yes.
I have to be careful because... Why am I being recorded?
In case people aren't here and they want to listen.
In case we want to use it against you.
That's a small fear. I have a small fear. If you ever wrote down the way I talk in a transcript, it would... It would not be pretty. Can you imagine if you read what I said instead of hearing what I said? It would not be good. Hi, all right. I am not Rabbi Schiff. Rabbi Schiff is in Australia. From whence he hails. And so I don't know how he managed to pull off a trip by Federation to go home. I gotta work on that one. So.
Where's home for you?
I am home now, that's true.
Where's home for you?
Right now it's Pittsburgh.
No, where are you?
I grew up in Plattsburgh, New York.
Oh.
Which is all the way upstate.
I grew up in Rockland.
Oh, yeah.
Further down.
There's a SUNY college there. So you grew up in Rockland County?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so ready? So you may get this joke. Where is upstate New York? 30 miles more north of wherever you are standing.
That's right. Exactly right. It's true, because you say the mountains, you know, the Catskills.
Yeah.
For
if
the,
you're in Manhattan, you're yeah, like you're like Rockland County.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Right. I'm not going
but if you're in Rockland County, you're like, no, Orange County.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're in Orange County, you're like Albany, those people.
Yeah. Right. Buffalo.
So I lived for the last 11 years, I lived in Newburgh, New York. I was in Orange County. And
Newburgh.
So Newburgh. Different people know different Newburgh. If you're in military, it's 15 miles north of West Point. If you like to shop, it's 12 miles north of Woodbury Commons.
And there's a
which
great,
wasn't there when I was
which
going
wasn't there.
There's a great diner by the Stewart Airport.
I doubt.
Stewart's
a little bit further north.
What? Do you remember the name? Because if you're going to say Neptune Diner, I have some bad news.
Oh, did it close?
It just closed in the past year. But there is another one that people love, Alexis Diner. There's this thing called the Alexis Diner, which is right on 84, right? Just off the highway. And people, I had friends from Pittsburgh come, they were passing through. If you drive to New England, you have to, and you're on 84, you cross the river, that's where. And they were in this diner, and it's one of those classic Greek diners with like the giant laminated menu with 400 items on it. And
the revolving dessert.
There you go, right?
That's
right, right.
Typical in the
and they were in heaven, and I'm like, it's just a regular old diner. Like, oh no, it's so cool. So.
What happened to the red apple rust?
Mm.
Wow.
I think that's gone.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that is an old cut. That's a deep cut. That
yeah.
I only know that, forgive me, from history.
Oh my God.
When, yeah. Well, I didn't live there then. So the Red Apple Rest, when all the Jews would go, this is much more pleasant to talk about suicide. When the Jews would go to the Borscht Belt up into the Catskills.
The Catskills.
Before the interstate and all this, there was a rest stop, and it was this big diner called the Red Apple Rest, and it was more or less halfway.
Right.
And it became legendary. Like, generations of children would look forward to this break at the Red Apple Rest, and it was like legendary.
Yeah.
And the highway, you know, the highway kind of killed it. So
it was around for a while.
A while, but it's been closed. I mean, I was there for 11 years. It was certainly closed.
Yeah. I mean, it was closed. Yeah, it's a structure, I think.
The structure's still there.
It wasn't what it was.
Yeah. But that is, so there's a certain generation that remembers
it. It only disappeared about 50 years ago.
About 50 years ago, is that when it was?
Yeah.
Well, when the Cookway was built.
Yeah.
Then the old settlement building was again.
Yeah. All right, so.
And I'm 55.
So I am Rabbi Larry Friedman. So I'm Rabbi Larry Friedman. So I used to be here. I used to be here at Temple Sinai. I was associate rabbi at Temple Sinai for 10 years, and I went away for 13 years, and now I'm back, like a moth. And so I'm back, and I am teaching here. I'm the director of JJEP, which is the Joint Jewish Educational Program. It's the combined religious school of Rhode of Shalom and Beth Shalom.
So, I was going to say the boys.
Sorry, say?
Our grandson.
Oh, okay. So there you go.
And
so
Beth Shalom.
Right, that's all. So we have 165 students, and I'm feeling confident we can grow. That's a tough thing these days, but I'm feeling confident. All right. So do you have? I don't know what page you start on, but 98, if you please.
I
So I taught it myself the other day, and I didn't realize that it's an hour, so I've already squandered 7 minutes, so I'll try to move it right along. Suicide, it's surprisingly complex. What do you think you know about it? What's the rule in Judaism?
Don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
At one point, you couldn't be buried in the
cemetery. Buried, we'll get to that.
You had to be on the fence.
All right, let's see what that is. Anyone else, what you know offhand? All right, so page 98. Someone like to read that little those introductory scenario for me? Sharon, go ahead, would you like to?
Sure. Ezra and Carmela Kaduro.
Speak louder, please.
Ezra and Carmela Kaduri, both 62, from Moshav Sedei Trumot in the Beit Shan Valley, committed suicide in the early hours of Friday morning. Though the couple did not leave a suicide note behind, the police are confident that Ezra shot himself first and that Carmela then took her own life. It is understood that the couple took their lives due to the economic difficulties that they were facing as farmers. Having read about this tragedy in the newspaper, two friends began a discussion whether Ezra and Carmela should have been honored with the traditional Jewish mourning rituals. Both of them knew that Jewish tradition opposed suicide, and they had both heard that those who take their own life are not buried in the usual section of a Jewish cemetery. Still, while one friend believed that this was a premeditated suicide, and as such, mourning rites should be curbed, another argued that the suicide was prompted by great personal difficulty and should be considered as an act of desperation. What do you think?
So I don't want to spend too much time talking about it, but basically they're in financial distress and seems to be a double suicide because of that. Yes. Renee, you are looking appalled.
What would be considered other than a great personal difficulty? In that mindset, I would assume that you are doing that because there is a great personal difficulty in your mind.
Let me ask you this. I am having great personal difficulty, and that is why I robbed the bank, because I need the cash. So I should not be held accountable. I mean, nice Rahmunis.
Yeah.
It's nice Rahmunis, but the law is the law, no? Yeah, what do you think?
Isn't there a distinction to be made for penalty, for facing consequences when you're still alive versus not?
What do you mean?
Like, in the bank robbery scenario, you can be held accountable because you're still alive and you can be held accountable.
Oh.
With suicide, you've killed yourself. So, in terms of accountability, you know, are you being buried somewhere else outside the normal realm of the synagogue because that's the way to be held accountable after death? Or
so it's a really, and we're going to see that as we go through, like, oh, they're dead. What are you going to do? Like, you can't do anything. We are going to see a question. We're going to bring them back, so punish them. So we're going to see some of the texts are going to suggest one of the problems with these rules, who are these rules about, right, when you bury them in a different section or something like that, like who is really being punished?
The
family, right? So, or maybe it's a warning, or I don't know. So that's actually going to come up, right? So it's a little sticky here. Yes?
Two things. I once heard a talk by a parent of a child who died by suicide, and she said, please don't use the word commit, because it makes it sound like they committed a crime. And in Judaism, it is a crime, but it just cuts right to the heart of the people who are left behind. So you say the person died by suicide. And secondly, I'm willing to do anything to help somebody go through that. And secondly, I don't think we have a right to judge. I think if a person determines it's something he or she can't handle, and all kinds of steps have been taken to help that person handle it, I don't think we have a right to judge.
Maybe.
And I know it's a
maybe.
It's a permanent.
It's Jewish law.
I understand.
It's all about judging. What else is there besides judging?
We're human, though. And
oh, you're bringing in morality. This is going to be so long now. Oh my God.
And when you talk to teenagers about suicide, you say that it's a permanent solution to a temporary problem, but people who are contemplating suicide don't look at it as a temporary problem.
Okay, so that's actually right. So they are, okay, we need to get there. So we're gonna keep pushing through because there's so many things. That actually, let me lean on that for a second. The people who die by suicide, language is a lesser of importance to me than the point. People who die by suicide often feel that their problem is not temporary, but it's overwhelming, and that therefore the solution is the only solution. And wait, where is it going with that? And that's going to speak to their mindset, which is going to have an impact of where we're going. That's not where I wanted to go with that, but I'm sure the tangent will come back up or the point. All right, let's go to whatever page you have next. Do you have one where it says text one?
Yeah.
All right, so text one, gray sheet 9-5, and then it's quoted right down below. So just to save a little bit of time, 9-5 is talking about Noah. God bless Noah and his sons. Verse 3, I'm just reading this. Verse 3, you can eat all kinds of different creatures. You can eat all different kinds of vegetation. You can't eat flesh with its lifeblood in it. But for your own lifeblood, I will require a reckoning. I will require it of every beast, of man too. Will I require a reckoning for human life, of every man for that of his fellow man? Completely clear. Not completely clear. It's a little bit confusing. So let's go to Talmud Bavli Tractate Bava Kama 91b. Did Rabbi Schiff tell you Talmud how this works? Talmud a little bit?
Speak.
What? So
speak.
So Talmud is written, let's just call it 200 BCE before the Common Era to 600 CE. In two parts, Mishnah is really the law. Gemara is commentary. You put them all together, it's Talmud. Before they had the technology of binding, which may seem not to you, but it is, that's pretty good technology. You bind a book, it doesn't go anywhere. The pages stay put, you can transport it pretty easily. They can have libraries, well, easier libraries. So before they had binding, they would have folios, they would just have paper, and then you would like put a twine or ribbon or something around it. The paper would be just pile them up, and then you had, just like old school albums, an A side and a B side. Today we have page 14 and page 13, right? You can give it a different number, but that's what that is. So this is from Talmud, the Masechet, the tractate called Bava Kama, and it's 91, the B side. Perhaps it was the Tana of the teaching. But for your own lifeblood, I will require a reckoning, which Rabbi Elazar interpreted as, I will demand out of your own life a reckoning for of your blood. Not really. Very tricky. How do you guys usually do this? Does Rabbi Schiff, do you read these analysis? Or you have the analysis, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you don't have enough. I have enough. All right, I gotta sit down. So, you can all see me, sort of.
Yes, sir. Okay.
Okay. Good. Okay. So there's no real law against suicide in the Torah. There's no law against it that we can see. There's only seems to be in the Tanakh only two times that somebody killed themselves. One of them is King Shaul, Saul, and King Shaul killed himself. We'll get to that in a little bit. By your own lifeblood, I will have a reckoning. It has been interpreted as just like there's a reckoning for someone else's lifeblood that you might take. So I will have a reckoning for your own lifeblood, and that seems to be where we have this notion that suicide is not good. It's banned. But that's kind of it. Yeah.
So thou shalt not kill doesn't cover suicide?
You know better than that. I know you know better than that. You have been misinterpreted. What is the real translation? You know. I know you know.
You probably taught me, but I forget.
It doesn't say you shouldn't kill.
Oh.
Murder.
There you go. Right. What's the difference? Big difference, right?
It's somebody else.
Like, murder is a whole different thing than killing, right? If you come at me with a knife, I'm gonna kill you, right? That's fine. That's not murder, right? That's not murder. If the famous story of the axe head, right? This is in the Torah, right? You swing back and the head of the axe goes flying and hits somebody by accident, right? That's not murder. It's manslaughter. There's a whole place you have to run off to. That's a whole other story, but it's not murder.
Premeditated.
Right, so premeditated, right? Something like that. If you're in a war, it's not murder. So so you can't murder. So maybe you can't murder yourself, right? But it doesn't say that. It's murder. So there's this notion, maybe there's the notion that your lifeblood, just trying to see how to, the quote is, I will demand out of your own life a reckoning for your blood. There's something, how do we take the, yeah, that's it. It's really like, because of your blood, I'm going to have a reckoning. I'm going to demand satisfaction, says God, more or less, for your blood. And there's always been this notion that the blood, although when they talk about blood, they talk about, they're meaning your soul. There's a notion that your soul, there's some people, sort of this mystical thing, that your soul is found in your blood, like literally in your blood. Like, where's the soul? Well, throughout your whole body, and it's in your blood. And another reason why we're not supposed to eat blood, by the way, and that blood has to be tended to properly and buried and that whole thing. Let's go to the next one. Let's go to text 3.
That's just a mystical thing? The blood equals soul?
It's kind of mystical. It depends who you're talking to. So nefesh damo, like the soul is in his blood. The soul is in his blood. Like if you eat an animal, you can't eat the blood of an animal, so blood pudding is out. Right? No, you see, I saw that, right? You're like, gross, right? But lots of places do. It's not, you know, blood pudding. Go over
so
to England.
Animals have souls.
Animals have an animal soul, as opposed to a human soul. That's a whole other story we're not going to get into. They have something, right? Maybe not a neshama, but definitely a nefesh. They have something, right? If you've ever seen a dog go, right? They have something, right? So it's kind of bad enough that you're gonna kill an animal. I mean, we're allowed to do it, but it's not ideal. But if you're going to kill an animal to eat it, don't be cruel and eat up its very soul along with it, right? There's sort of a moral aspect to that. All right, let's go to text 3. Does someone with a big voice want to read this? I feel like people in the back. Go ahead.
So, the sin of one who murders himself is greater than that of one who murders someone else for several reasons. First, through this murder, he has left no possibility for any remorse and repentance.
There you go. We had
second,
that, right?
Second, death, according to Talmud Bavli, Tractate Yom 86, etc., is the greatest form of repentance. But he, on the contrary, has committed suicide through his death, the greatest sin, namely murder. Third, through his act, he has made clear his repudiation of the Creator's ownership of his life, his body, and his soul. He has denied the simple idea that he did not participate in his own creation at all, but thinks rather that his entire identity is exclusively within his power to sustain, to reproduce his existence, or to destroy it. He is like one who actively and intentionally burns a scroll of the Torah for our sages, may their memory be blessed. Compare the exit of the soul from the body to a scroll of the Torah that now has been burned, and he must therefore face judgment in the future for this as well.
Ooh. Okay, so there's a lot there. First of all, you guys picked up on a whole bunch of things in advance, right? So what's the first one? First, though, this murder, he has left no possibility for any remorse and repentance. I should say, I don't, I mean, many of us just by living life know people or know family members who've had to endure suicide by a family member. So it wouldn't be that surprising if this room had a number of people who were touched by this one way or the other. So let me just offer, I'm taking you down, all right? We're getting, it's gonna be bad, all right? We'll come back up on the other side, but this is not gonna be fun, okay? So we're all about condemnation right now. So just hang in there, okay? Number one, no possibility for any remorse and repentance. Kind of what you were saying, right? Except a little bit flip on the person's part, right? Like, okay, so I rob a bank, but I always have this opportunity for tshuva. Excuse me, for tshuva, I always can come back, right? I mean, at least the possibility, now there's not. So kind of like, I mean, put yourself in Yom Kippur mode, right? This is a real, not only is it a tragedy, but it's an offense, right? To unavail yourself of the possibility of Yom Kippur. Like, what is wrong with you, right? Let alone, never mind the part where we can't punish you, right? You can't help yourself, right? So that's number one. Number two, death as a form of repentance. I don't know if you know that, that death itself, it can be seen as repentance, that you are, you have to think of martyrs, right? You know, the saintly martyrs, you know, that through death they are cleansed, elevated, something of that part, that point. Small little tangent, one of my favorite things to talk about in Yom Kippur is like a practice death. It's like a mini death. No, you didn't know that. No, you have to invite me back for Yom Kippur. You don't eat, you don't drink, you don't have sex, you don't anoint yourself with fancy perfumes, you don't wear leather, which is luxurious. Who else doesn't do all that?
Dead
people. Who else wears a white shroud all day long? Dead people, right? So you might not, but the white robe that you see on rabbis very often is really an echo of the kittel, which is what we'll wear in death. So Yom Kippur is kind of a mini death. Spoiler, you got through, right? You made it to the other side, and so this mini death has like cleansed your soul, and you have received your absolutions of sorts. Yeah, your atonement, right? Anyway, small little tangent. There's a whole story there. You don't believe me. It's true. Okay, you don't have to believe me. It's true, but you don't have to believe me. It's a fascinating way of looking at it. Third, this is one we haven't talked about, repudiation of the creation of, right? Like, you get a gift and then you toss it out, right? So if you gave a gift to a child or grandchild, right? Now, the rules are, when you give a gift, freely given, it's theirs to do with whatever they want, right? But if you give a gift and then the kid takes it and throws it down the stairs and sees how many pieces it can be broken into, you feel pretty bad about it, right? Even though, right, you gave it, but you feel pretty bad, right? So think of that, God gives us our life and then we trash it, right? So there's that whole side. So bad. Let's keep going. Let's go to the next one, text 4. Someone else wanna read? Anyway, I can do it, but I just need someone with a big voice.
We do not occupy ourselves in any respect with the funeral rites of one who has committed suicide willfully. Rabbi Yisrael said, "We exclaim over him, alas, for a lost life, alas, for a lost life." Rabbi Akiva said to him, "Let him be as is. Do not honor him nor curse him. We do not rend garments for him. We do not share the shoulder in mourning, and we do not eulogize him. We do, however, stand in the mourner's row for him and say the mourner's blessing for him, since these show respect for the living relatives. The general rule is, with anything that involves respect for the living, we occupy ourselves. With anything that does not involve respect for the living, the public does not in any way occupy itself."
Okay. Let me just share, this bare shoulder is something you don't see very often. Well, okay, sorry. The bare shoulder you see never, but it clearly it was one of the things that you would do in mourning. We do know the rending of garments, right? So you may actually see people still rip their clothing. Sometimes I've seen men cut a tie, or I don't have one, but like a pocket, you know. But mostly you probably see the kriya ribbon, right? So the kriya ribbon is the stand-in. You put it on, it becomes an accessory. You rip that, you've ripped your clothes. That's the idea. Okay, what else do we have here? So can someone put this in your own words? What's happening here?
That we show respect for the mourners, but don't do much in terms of the person who committed suicide.
There's something offensive about what the person did, but I mean, the people are the people. Like, you can't, the rose that they're talking about. So this is when I brought this back. It's a real old tradition and people love it. I don't know, people love it. Should go speak to your rabbi. So when you're done with the burial, right? When you're done with the burial, I get people to like sort of station themselves just off the grave, and they're shoulder to shoulder facing in two rows. Has anyone ever seen this?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Do people do it?
Sure.
Oh, I'm too glad, because it's...
I've not seen that. I've not seen it in the Jewish
community. Yeah, you don't usually see it.
Lining up in rows is common to allow the family to be first.
Right.
To be respected and honored, but shoulder to shoulder is not common.
Well, I mean, shoulder to shoulder in the sense of making a line.
Yes.
Right. They do make one.
Yeah, I mean, shoulders, like, as opposed to front to back, right? It's like that way, right? And it's really nice. And then what you do is the family leaves, and what I always say to people is, you know, at a moment when you feel very much lost and alone, you're literally surrounded by friends and family who love and care for you. So I'm glad people do it. It's a lovely little thing. And then I always remind people, like, you should, as they walk through, you have to say words of condolence. And so people, you know, condolences, so sorry. So that's what they're talking about here, that as they leave the grave, that the community, you know, makes these rows to kind of surround them, right? Which is nice, right? It's not their fault. They're not to be punished. But this other person, you know, we don't do the whole thing here. And there
but,
does.
Well, wait a minute.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
That the person who took their life is still buried.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's still a burial.
Yeah.
So this burial takes place in another part of the cemetery?
Go to the next page.
Okay.
Or next, whatever, text 5.
I mean, you're still having a funeral of sorts. You're just not...
Read text 5 for me,
there,
if you would, please.
There it is. Me?
Yeah. Real loud.
If the suicide is definitely an intentional suicide, he is to be buried at least 6 feet from surrounding graves. Sometimes cemeteries reserve a special section for suicides. Otherwise, it is usually located near the fence or border of the cemetery.
Yeah. So it's there, but separate.
What?
It's there, but separate.
It's there, but separate. And so, like, why? Do you want to guess? Yeah.
Well, no, but like you were saying earlier, this seems to be direct contradiction to the text above it, where it's, if it's supposed to be for the families, if it's supposed to be, you know, anything that's going to include respect for the living, which would be burying your family member in a family plot or whatever it is, this seems in direct contradiction to that.
I agree.
Because every time they go visit and,
They're reminded. Right.
Yeah. I don't disagree. I'll justify it. I know what you mean. So there's two sides of a funeral. There's kibud avelim and nichum avelim and kibud hamet, kibud hamet. Kibud hamet are all those things that have to do with the deceased. Nichum avelim are all the things that have to do with the mourners. One is honoring the dead, the other is comforting the mourners. And so that's the split that he's doing here. Honoring the dead, comforting the mourners. And here in this text, and the tradition seems to be that the burial site, the grave, right, the actual grave, clearly is falling in Kvod HaMet, those rites and rituals that are given to the deceased, the body itself, right? And I, you're right, of course, because every time the family would go back to visit, the shame, if you will, or how about less harshly the stigma, or less harshly the pointing out, such good English, the pointing out of what happened, you know, is there's no anonymity, right? You don't get to go back in 20 years and do an annual visit and be with the other people, right? You know, the high holiday visitation to the graves, for example, right? The whole, you know, a whole bunch of people come out and they're all mingling, walking around finding graves, and you're over, you know, you know, it's that kind of, right? So I think you're right, but I think that, look, the body's the body, and the grave is for the body. I know what you mean.
Yeah, but it does contradict what we read earlier, that, you know, to have respect for the mourners.
If we're defining location as the thing that brings the stigma, I don't disagree, but I have a tangible problem. I can't, if we follow this, I can't have the grave be separate and not separate at the same time, right? I can't, maybe we should have developed an asterisk. Like but all of the mutts, but all the stones have to have a little asterisk on it. I mean, that'd be weird too, right? Like, so.
And it may not bother everybody.
The family is aware of what happened.
Well, I think it's also not a legacy, because that's not the right word, but like generations from now, when people go to the family plot or just wandering, you know, people wander around, like, if you know what you're looking at and you find these graves over here by themselves, you make that assumption that that's, so I think it's one of those things that like lives on and on and on.
But it has nothing to do with the mourning at that point.
I don't think it has anything to do with, well, you mean like years and years?
Yeah.
Right, no, for sure not, because presumably these are strangers who are walking around, right? Is that your scenario?
Right, or like, you know, you go back and it's your great-great-grandparents who you never knew and nobody talks about because they committed suicide, so nobody talks about them, but you find their grave off by itself, away from the rest of the family, like, you make the assumption that...
Right.
Which is no better than anybody not talking
about. Right, but it's something that's always... And I guess in some ways maybe it is that like kind of stick it to them for doing something
maybe
that they shouldn't have done, that like everyone for sure.
Look, it's so offensive. Okay, so I had somebody want to buy a yardside plaque. So I'm gonna just delve in, right? Well, I like to operate without a net and insult you fine people. So I don't know who I'll be insulting, but probably somebody. I had somebody come to me and they wanted to buy a yardside plaque for Steve. Right? Who's Steve? Steve is my cat. They wanted a yardside plaque for Steve the cat. And I said no, because I didn't want Steve the cat having a name next to Grandma Pearl. I didn't want somebody to come in to the synagogue and have that small little, you know, pilgrimage to the wall over there and notice that there's a new cat, new plaque, and like this cat's literally was named Steve. So the guy said, yeah, but no one will know. I'm like, well, that's not, you know. But, you know, like, there's Grandma. Oh, I remember Grandma. It's so nice to see her name. So glad to be back and visiting. And, oh, look, Fluffy is next door. So there's something about that that's, like, offensive, right? Like I'm good to go with your pet. I get it. People love their pets. I get it. But there's something wrong about mingling Fluffy, right, with Grandma. And if that's so, with a yardside plaque, how much the more so if you went to the grave and in this honored place of this sacred honored place is, you know, a Lassie next to Mom. It's right. And so work that through. Mom is now going to be buried for eternity with this person who was so horrible that he took his own life in a complete offense to God and all the rest of us. Right, you see, like it's like we're maybe a little bit more kind and compassionate and understanding, which we will get to. But work with me on this sort of approach, right? Do you really want Zadie buried next to this guy who did horrible things, right? No, like it's offensive, it's a taboo.
But that same token to the person who, and I get that there's text that says that suicide is worse than murder, but by the same token, does the murderer get to be buried next to Zeta too?
That's a question I gotta ask Rabbi Schiff, because that's a good one. Because let's say you are, I think his name is in the paper the other day, let's say you're really, really harboring a grudge against Milken or Boesky, right? Remember those names and all that they did?
Yeah.
And I love working with adults who are older than 16. It's good. So Ivan Boesky, Michael Milken, like these guys did horrible, horrible things. Or what's the other guy? He's in prison forever.
Madoff,
right. So that's a really, really good question. Do you want to visit Zadie, who happens to be in the same congregation as Boesky, Milken, right? Now, these guys ruin lives and destroy people, right? Horrible, horrible, horrible. That's a really good question, right? Let alone Jack the Ripper or Charles Manson or whatever, right? So it's a really, really, really good question. Right. So I'll have to ask another. Yeah.
How do you deal with someone who is executed for crimes?
Who's executed for their crimes? Yeah. So what do you mean? Like, what do you do? Like, I don't know what they do.
We get to the death penalty later. I think it's a whole day.
Yeah.
But where do you bury them? I mean, I don't know what the law is, dude. I am assuming they return the body to the family. I assume.
The family's Jewish and wants to bury the body next to grandma.
That's a good one.
I think we'll probably
get to that.
See, we got you
on this one. Like, a suicide zombie is tainted the ground,
that's a,
but like...
Right, like a suicide would taint, but does your life... I mean, all right, I'll try to justify. If death is the ultimate atonement, you know what? I think we're going to find an answer. Let's see if we can find an answer. You people get mean. I like it. It's right. You're like, what about?
What happens to the Ortizite plaque?
What about the Ortizite plaque?
Can it go up on the wall with everybody else's?
For suicide?
Oh, for suicide.
I never thought.
Right next to the cat.
So the only good news I have for you about a yard site plaque. So the only good news I have about a yard site plaque, and now I really will insult you. Do you remember? I remember. So I was gone for 13 years. So then I come back and it's like Rip Van Winkle to me. As far as I know, Charles Morris, they just knocked it down about 2 years ago, and there was a whole brouhaha of what to do with the memorial plaques that were throughout the entire building. I think that happened 3 years ago. I think it happened 20 years ago. So you may or may not remember, but and I remember going there, visiting people, and the walls were covered with like this marble inscription, right? From like 18 God knows what, right? And the whole thing was huge. What would they do with all those plaques? And I'm like, it's a donation. It's just a nice little thing. The Yardside plaque is, it's nothing. It's meaningful, right? But it's a donation and meaningful. I'm sorry to be like that, but it's a revenue stream. But it's also a really meaningful one. So the problem with putting someone who's a suicide yard site plaque, that's a good one, because a yard site plaque is kind of a made up modern thing. To have like a matzevah, like a gravestone, like a duplicate gravestone in a location where we visit more frequently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it costs electricity anyway, because it's got...
It costs electricity, and yeah. So that's a really, really good question. Do those people get separated out? Because it's not the body, right? It's and can you even have a revenue stream from a suicide? Whoa, that's cold. I don't know.
What about saying Kaddish? Do you say Kaddish for...
Let's keep going. I think we may get there. Yeah, go ahead, you've been waiting.
If suicide is the ultimate atonement, why are we proposing the primary carry? That's what the Japanese are saying. Death is the ultimate atonement, so why are we proposing
the
suicide?
Because who by fire and who by water? Somebody's going to die, but it's up to God. And when you... This is the problem with murder, right? Let's go theological.
It happens
right?
Every day.
So let's go theological. What is the problem with murder? Do not tell me that it's sad and it don't tell me.
Premeditated.
What?
You're playing God.
Yeah, you're playing God,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
When you murder someone, you have usurped God's authority. That's the theological problem. I know it's sad and blah, blah, blah. But murder is a problem because you've decided that you have played God, quite literally, right? I decide who lives, I decide who dies.
So
suicide, that's your answer, why we can't have Harry Caray, right? Because that's why. The issue, which we won't get to, but like assisted suicide or like end of life sort of thing, it's a whole other world, right? Nobody lived long enough, more or less, to have severe dementia, right? I mean, age would kill you before various cancers, right? You live to be 50, 60, right?
So does God decide cancer, that's how you're gonna die, and untreatable depression?
Yes. Oh.
No.
Well, untreatable depression might lead somebody to suicide, but
so would cancer
how
possibly?
How does that work? Where's that line between will? And do you get a
wow. Wait, I need a moment. Okay. All right. You've taken a theology that I really don't like.
Are you coming back next week?
And yeah, I'm coming back next week. Okay. So you've taken a theology that I don't care for, and you have given it warp speed. So if we have a theology that God gives you the various illnesses, right? Everything comes from God. Let's not be Calvinistic about it. Let's just say everything comes from God. So if everything comes from God, and whatever reason, let's just work with me, with Lori over there. Mm-hmm. So if everything comes from God, including cancer, I'm sorry, that's very sad and whatnot, but if everything comes from God, and if we are beginning to understand mental illness as akin to physical illness, mm-hmm, not some sort of
personal weakness,
thank you. Not some sort of personal weakness, but brain chemistry and God knows what is going on, right? Mm-hmm. That it's akin, and therefore severe depression is also from God ultimately, if you buy this thing. And that would therefore say, well, you could no more have a stigma against somebody with stage 4 pancreatic cancer than you could with severe debilitating depression. Wowza. That's a good one. Which I think we may get to, but I just never thought of using a theology I don't care for and expanding it in that way. That's really interesting.
Even if it doesn't come from God, even if you don't start there, the question of untreatable, chronic, horrible depression is akin to untreatable, horrible, it goes to, I guess, end of life and state, those kinds of things.
So a small segue, but let's try to make it happen. Text 6. So in text 6, the Plishtim, Philistines, attacked Israel. Three of Shaul's sons, who was King Saul, went to war with him, and they all fell in battle. As the enemy archers were drawing near, Saul became very frightened, Ve'achel. According to some commentaries, Ve'achel means they actually wounded him. Saul asked his arms bearer to put an end to his life. When the arms bearer refused, Shaul grasped the sword, fell upon it, and died. So for brevity's sake, let me explain a little bit. So the arms bearer refused, right? I mean, how can I kill my king? Like, this, I can't possibly do this. Lots of different questions. One says Shaul was wounded and knew that like it was over, and he was like, you have to just kill me because I can't stand the pain maybe, or the end is near, right? Coup de grace, like I just can't handle it anymore. Interesting, right? End of life today, like I can't handle the pain anymore. They said, we know what's happening. Mortally wounded. The other thing is that perhaps he killed himself because he did not want to be taken into captivity, right? So that his head could be put on a pike and it would be a shameful thing to him, let alone to all of the kingdom of Israel, right? That their king is so debased on this. In the Geneva Conventions, one of the big things about the Geneva Convention is you are not allowed to parade, it's a war crime to parade prisoners in front of crowds. You're not allowed to abuse them, whether physically or emotionally or anything like that, right? You can't do that. This was well before the Geneva Conventions. And so there's this fear, perhaps he had a fear, that if I don't kill myself, they'll torture me, right? So it's like better I should die on my own terms than have them do some sort of abuse to me, right? They could keep him alive. So all kinds of questions about there, that happened about when you know the end is coming. Let's go to text 7 for a second. Someone want to read that for me? Go ahead.
Rule 2. Who comes within the category of one who committed suicide willfully? Not one who climbed to the top of a tree and fell down and died, nor one who ascended to the top of the roof and fell down. But rather one who exclaims, behold, I'm going to the top of the roof or to the top of the tree, and I intend to throw myself down in order to die. If he is seen ascending to the top of a tree and falling and dying, he is presumed to have committed suicide willfully, and with the person who commits suicide willfully, we do not occupy ourselves in any respect. Go.
Okay, so an interesting one, you have to actually see it. We're starting to come out of the valley a little bit here, right? You actually have to see it, right? I don't know. He was really struggling. I think he climbed to the top of the tree and jumped on purpose. Hey, you don't know that.
What if he slipped?
Maybe he slipped, right? Maybe there's solace by looking at the view, right? But there's something here that's a little more kind, right? It's a little kind. Right, you don't know that unless you hear him say, "I'm going to," you know, "you jumped off the bridge." Did he? Did he slip? Did you know what was in it? Like, okay, so a little bit nicer. Rule 3, not so nice, but go ahead.
Wait.
Yeah.
Doesn't this say that suicide is presumed?
Yeah.
So it's not so nice.
I thought you have to hear him say it.
It says, "Behold, I'm going to the top of the roof." The
right,
top
but
of the
it
tree.
Says if you see him climb up a tree and die, but you don't, and fall and die, but you don't hear him say anything at all, you're presuming it's not suicide.
Yeah.
So it's not
suicide. Right. Yeah.
But the start of it says you have to watch him go up and say, "Behold, I'm going to the top of the roof." So I think
if you see him go up after he said that, then you assume it was suicide.
Right. He says, "Behold, I'm going to the top of the tree," and then you watch him climb.
And he
falls, whether or not he slipped or not, you presume that he did it.
Right. It's not that obviously he got to the top of the roof, right? But you have to hear him say it and then see him go up to the top of the roof, right? And by the way, you can't hear him say it and then next week say, "You know, he told me," right? Like, maybe change his mind. Maybe he was having a bad day, right? Like, the presumption is not. Except for 3. Go ahead.
If he was found strangled, hanging from a tree, or lying dead on a sword, he is presumed not to have committed suicide willfully, and none of the rites...
Oh, sorry, I misread it, right? So he's not committed, like, it seems pretty obvious, but why would you not consider that a suicide?
Because somebody else acted.
Maybe somebody else did it.
Back in the day, that was
right.
The normal
right.
way of killing people.
Right.
But also, it is a little bit kind. You don't know. You weren't there. Right? You don't know what's in that person's
mind.
Sounds
like you assume it's not suicide unless it's specifically, obviously stated that it is.
Right. So we're starting to come out of the harshness, the severity of it all. Rule 4.
It is related to the son of Goranus of Lod that he ran away from school and his father threatened to box his ears. In fear of his father, he went and killed himself by jumping in a pit. They went and inquired of Rabbi Tarfon, who ruled, "We do not withhold anything from him."
And Rule 5 is a similar story. It's related of a child in B'nai Brak, that he broke a bottle on Shabbat and his father threatened to box his ears. In fear of his father, he went and killed himself by jumping in a pit. They inquired Rabbi Akiva, who ruled, "We do not withhold anything from him," meaning full honors, full reps, right? That is a really interesting thing that actually speaks, I think it speaks to a modern era, fear, right? Like that someone is killing himself. I mean, boxing his ears, clearly there's, it's got to be a euphemism for more, right? Like the dad's going to beat the crap out of him. Like really, it has to be. Now, I'm not suggesting that killing yourself is better than taking a beating, but I think the rabbis here are kind of sympathetic, perhaps a little anachronistic maybe, but to the mindset of the young man, of the boy.
So what would be the difference of that and bullying, right? Kids are getting bullied and taking their lives.
I'm going to go with none.
Right? This is exactly what it is.
Yeah, right? They can't take it anymore. And we're like, I mean,
but those kids or young adults or whatever do not get a proper, you know, a burial like we do. It's considered, right? Like here it's okay, but if from what we just learned, right. If one commits suicide, no matter what the reason.
But
you don't know, like, would that be considered this?
I thought that's what you were saying, like, he's going to box his ears, it's like bullying. Like he's gonna
and
get,
I think that also comes back to what you were saying about, like, untreatable depression, that person, the things that are worrying them and are keeping them in that state of depression are so overwhelming that they don't see anything else, just like the kid feels having his ears boxed is worse than...
Right, but you don't. But we don't know what happens, right?
Right.
To anybody who committed suicide, we don't know the backstory. We don't know that they were threatened their ears are going to be boxed or they were threatened at school or whatever. They chose to take their life because they couldn't take it anymore.
Right.
And when you don't know the backstory, they are not permitted to have a burial because it's considered, you know...
Well, okay, so in this case, they did know the backstory, right? In number, 15 and rule 4 and rule 5? They did know the backstory. That's why they went to the rabbi, and the ruling from the rabbi is when it says we do not withhold anything from him, meaning he gets the full honors.
Right, but if you don't know, if a child doesn't, if a young
adult
doesn't if a young adult doesn't tell you or a child doesn't tell you I'm being bullied and you find them, God forbid, you know, in their bedroom.
Right, you don't know.
You don't know. They didn't share
sometimes
it with you.
Friends come out and start telling you there's an investigation, but yeah, it's a possibility. 1, 2.
Just quickly, is the key here that it's a child?
Yes.
That they're not an adult to make that decision to know what they're making an adult decision, and so therefore they're absolved.
There's definitely add some.
I wonder, because if that were the same story of a man was going to go home and he knew his brother was going to beat him and he didn't want to face it, so he killed himself. I doubt that the rabbis would say, go for it.
Right.
So if that's
the minor is
then
I'm on topic, but not in regard to the child. Please take the child out of my comments. For the record, I'm the only non-Jewish person here to my knowledge.
Okay.
In the tradition in which I was raised, if you committed suicide, you went straight to hell.
Yeah.
Do not pass go and don't get your $200.
Right.
Okay? I am listening to this and finding myself getting very angry. And my anger is saying, how dare you judge? You have no right, you rhetorically.
The tradition that you grew up in?
Right to judge. Why that person chose to commit suicide.
Are you angry at the Jewish community or angry at the church you grew up in?
Neither. I, for the record, I have no interest in organized religion.
Okay.
It is how dare we presume to judge. We don't know. We will never know.
Yeah.
Words will never express.
Yeah.
Right.
And if someone is in so much pain, that to them, the only way to relieve that pain was to take their life. At worst, I should feel compassion for not having been able to be there to do anything to alleviate that pain. I'm sorry, I got really...
No, that's fine. And I think you're on track. I think you're on track.
It's going
and,
that you're...
And we are going in that direction. So let me keep going, because I think you're right. Look, we're going through a survey of the way we've understood each other and the way society, at least Jewish law, was kind of organized. So let's keep going. Yeah. Right? Let's keep going and see. Text 8, a minor, now this is very even more, right? I said child before, so who said that? Lori. Laura and Lori, that's why I'm so good, right? So Lori,
another one.
So Lori picked up on it before. Here, even more specifically, a minor who willfully takes his own life is considered as one who acted non-willfully. And similarly, adult who takes his life willfully and he was under duress, like King Saul, we do not withhold from him any respect. This is Shulchan Aruch, so what are we talking about? Joseph Caro, he died in 1575, so what is that, Middle Ages?
Yeah.
Right? So already you can see that the changing, right? It's a pretty clear change. And this is Shulchan Aruch. This is like the code. This is the one. So even an adult, if he's under duress, I don't know what that means, some sort of mental anguish, right?
What is the Hebrew word for duress here?
Ketana me'orat mo chashu kishala nadar v'chein gadol me'orat mo anus. Anus.
That came up before.
Force, yeah.
But that came,
yeah.
News came up.
Is that the same word that was in that one? Yeah.
With the abortion?
Yeah, I think came up with the portion. That came up
earlier.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
What was that saying?
So it's some sort of
taking
force. Like,
came up for abortion.
Yeah. It was the unknown word, the word that was hard to translate. Wasn't that the word?
No, it's a different word.
Oh, that's a song.
It's a different word, okay.
I think anus is also related in modern Hebrew to rape in the sense of like force, like out of your control, right? So,
one could say then, who would commit suicide if they weren't under duress? It would seem as though this would cover just about any suicide that could happen.
So let's go to text 9. Yeah. Yes. Right. Yes. We are going to legislate the stigma away.
That's what it feels like.
Right. We're gonna, the individual that was found strangled in prison. What does the law say about mourning him? Or are they allowed to recite the Kaddish to benefit his soul? If that is soul, then in our case, where he was discovered strangled while imprisoned, where it is impossible in any way that others did this to him, like assuming he's right locked up on his own, he is considered a suicide. And in this sin, he is judged as an apostate, and one does not say that he repented. And one can say, by virtue of the fact that he was in the prison of the non-Jewish court system, that this individual was scared for his life, that they might sentence him to death or send him to the prisons of Brno, which is worse than death. In these circumstances, one can continue to argue he thought it was permissible to commit suicide in the same way that King Saul killed himself when he was afraid of the cruel things that they would do to him. And it is not called with proper knowledge, meaning willful. Generally speaking, you cannot hold a person responsible for the things that he says or does during a time of distress. Maybe the individual killed himself at a time when his mind was confused and startled. May the merciful one help us. If that be the case, he cannot be deemed wicked because of what he did, and his sons would be obligated to say Kaddish.
Joan.
Joan has got it. You don't know me. You don't know my deal. You don't know my life. You don't know what prison is. Don't judge me, right? That's really where we're heading to. You don't know this guy. Yes, look, he's in a prison cell and he's locked up at night. You show up the next morning and he's dead. Obviously, nobody else did that to him, right? But you don't know his deal.
But what about why he went in to prison?
He went in, he went in. I mean, whatever.
It's true
but,
about Jeff Epstein?
But that's, right. Right, is it, you got to, I got, I'm over a minute. So, let's just assume that the medieval jailers are actually acting appropriately and that they're locked up and nobody can get to them. But just because you know 100% that he had to have killed himself because he's in jail behind bars and no one can reach him, just work with me, Sharon. Just because you know that, you don't know him. You can't judge him. You don't know what he was afraid of. Maybe he's pulling a Saul maneuver. Maybe he's going to be humiliated. Maybe he's going to, right? You don't know. But
it still goes back to what if he murdered? What if he murdered somebody and that's why he was in jail? Doesn't it go back to why he's there?
But there's two different things here. There's two different things. One is our, because one is the things that he did that he's being punished for, and the others are his mental anguish.
Okay.
Right? So I don't, I really need to stop. I would encourage you to keep reading them. Go to text 11. I say that in a case where you are dealing with the eternal shame and disgrace of the honor of an honorable family, this is from Germany, guy who wrote it, died in 1839. In a circumstance such that if the halakhic instructor were to allow them to observe the mourning practices, people would say the rabbis established all the facts of the case, and behold, it is not a suicide. Then let the instructor teach them to mourn from the outset, prior to all sorts of investigations, and even if it should be determined that he really did commit suicide. However, should there be the slightest doubt concerning whether or not he is a suicide, and even if they decided to be stringent in the matter of his burial, that is, they buried him apart and dishonored him, still, regarding the saying of Kaddish, the law would be on the side of the sons that they should recite it. I'm going to let you sort of unpack that, but we're really going to a place like, even if you kind of know, maybe you kind of don't know, and let's err on the side of offering the honors and rites to the person. Right? Let's just don't, you really, we don't know, right? We really sort of don't know.
At the end of the day, does it come down to the rabbi?
It always comes down to the rabbi.
Right, I mean,
it always comes down
that's
to the rabbi.
That's right. The thing. Like at the end
no,
of the day,
you don't have a pope. You got to go to your local rabbi.
It's the rabbi that's doing the burial that you say, here's
yeah,
the burial.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's your community. Yeah.
No, it like just tells you that what Danny always tells us is pick
choose your rabbi.
I mean, there's something to that. All right, so I do have to stop, but we sort of go on and on with this, and what's going to happen, look, I'm kind of glad that we got stuck in the worst part. I really am. I'm okay with that, because the worst part is stuff that we don't want to engage, we don't want to know about, but, you know, that's kind of, like, you got to know that. As we go up into the more modern day, even coming from, like, late Middle Ages, I mean, you know, which is pretty old, but, you know. We're already coming up out of the hill where there's sort of a, yes, it's a horrible thing, but, you know. And saying Kaddish is not some, like, little thing. Like, that's a huge deal, right? It may not be such a huge deal to us today, but talk about anguish to the family. So when the rabbi says, yeah, I know he's physically buried over there, but you should still continue to do Kaddish, and you should say, that's massive, that's huge. And that's the rabbi saying, look, we can't really judge. And it's going to go up and up and up as the decades go on, the centuries go on, where at this point we basically assume any suicide, we assume the person, if you want to talk about judging, we assume the person to be mentally incapacitated to the extent that there is no room for us to make any judgment because the person was so mentally incapacitated, there's no consent even to what's going on. They weren't in their right mind, if you will. And therefore, all honors and rites are afforded. They get buried wherever everybody gets buried. They are sick like any other pilgrims. And that's kind of where we are today. Thank you, everybody.
Well done.
Very good. Hi, sorry. I went long.
I don't know how brave you are.
The Judeo-Christian nexus. That's what that was. So you're saying no, you don't want to.